IR Simplified Podcast, episode 52. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining me here on this, another episode of the IR Simplified Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be talking about the recent Fair Work Commission ruling on casuals being able to seek quote-unquote permanent status, the launch of AustralianIndustrialRelations.com and the podcast, and anything else that tickles my fancy. So without further ado, let's get on with it. And first cab off the rank today is talking about the recent decision by the Fair Work Commission to allow or to insert a conversion clause into some of the modern awards that will allow casual employees who've been with a business for more than 12 months and have worked a series of regular ongoing hours and all that sort of stuff to convert their casual status to full-time or part-time status. Now, not surprisingly, and pretty much true to form, business groups are jumping up and down saying, you know, running around with their skies falling thing, that this is another way that the Act is going to reduce flexibility in the business and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, it's one of those things is that, yes, on paper it looks scary because this happens and that, you know, that can do this and this is what it says on paper. The reality is that you're having a look at someone's wage, someone's income. Now, you know, this is the funny thing about business groups and especially industrial relations in general, is that one minute if the commission hands down a decision that's favourable to the business groups or the unions, they're, you know, yay, this is good and this approves how the Act's working. Yet if they hand down a decision that isn't in their favour, then, oh, no, the commission needs to be scrapped and the Act is ancient, the Act is this and blah, 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 blah. So anyway, going back to the casual decision. Now, as I was saying, that you're talking about someone's wage here, and yes, I know it's one of those things that every employee loves to be, you know, thought of as, you know, full-time, permanent full-time or permanent part-time and all that, whereas the reality of it is that if you're getting a casual wage, especially at a part-time rate, and if someone's doing, you know, 38 hours a week and on an ongoing basis, so over 12 months as a casual, then first of all, the question needs to be asked, why aren't they being made full-time? So, you know, I'll leave that one for maybe another podcast episode or a bit of a rant later on. So, going back to the thing is that when you have a look at it, for those who, you know, if someone's doing, you know, 25, 30 hours a week as a casual, to go to part-time status is that they're looking at, you know, for all intents and purposes, a 25% reduction in salary because you're missing out on the 25% or 20% or whatever it is for that particular modern award, the casual allowance. Or the casual penalty rate. So this is the thing with every, you know, every second news report, news article is saying that household budgets are getting stretched to their max and that, you know, the power increases are going to put pressure on household budgets, the regio increases are going to do this and you know, whatever else is going on. So the question needs to be asked is that with that in mind, who is going to turn around and say, okay, yes, I'll go part-time for the X amount of hours a week, though I will drop my, you know, my take-home pay by, you know, whether it works out with bracket creep and all that sort of stuff, whether it works out with 25%, 20% or whatever, they're still taking a reduction in pay, take-home pay, for the same amount of hours. So this is the thing, is that, you know, how many people are going to take it up? You know, ultimately, I'd love to see once this comes in, maybe, you know, 12 months or 2 years down the track, is someone or an organisation go and do a survey and collate the results, is that, okay, yes, you know, in this particular industry, there were X amount of people that were classed as casuals and that they could have, they were able to access the provisions of conversion to part-time rate, yet out of those X amount, only Y amount took it up. So that would see, I think I'll be able to give us an understanding of whether this is a thing that's bad for business or good for business. And, you know, by the other side of the coin is that why shouldn't we be making employees part-time? You know, Casual, yes, we are. I understand flexibility and that there's some needs in some businesses where you need to get casuals in and all that sort of stuff. I'm not talking about that sort of stuff. And what I'm talking about is those that have, over the period of 12 months, have had regular ongoing hours. I mean, I know some people that have been casual for the last 4 years and they've been working there 20 hours a week for the last 4 years. I mean, you know, why shouldn't they be made permanent part-time? That's it, you know, remember, that is if they want to do that. So this is the thing, is that we need to stop, and this is directed at businesses and business groups and every expert out there decrying or having a big whinge about this decision, is that your employees aren't an expense on the business. They're a they're not a resource. They are a resource. They are the best advocate. I mean, they are the best advocate for your business. So why wouldn't you be giving them an incentive to stay with you rather than move somewhere else? I mean, you know, this is the thing. You could be, you know, Acme Widgets, making widgets under manufacturing. And I'm not sure, actually, did it go under the manufacturing award? But anyway, regardless, okay, we won't say Acme Widgets. We'll say, you know, Acme Restaurants, Acme Fast Foods, or whatever the particular modern award is that conversion rate will, that conversion clause will apply to. Now, let's say you've got, you know, one of your star employees there works between 25, maybe 20, 25 or 20, 30 hours a week as a casual. Why wouldn't you offer them permanent part-time status or part-time status? Because it's the thing, is that if they're such a high-valued employee, keep them there. If they're not worthy of going part-time, get rid of them. And this is what businesses and, you know, and management and everyone else that needs to be looking at, is that you recruit for the business. You recruit to grow the business. You recruit people to become advocates for your business. So this is getting into one of my little rants again, so I'll tone it down a bit and bring it back the other way. So this is the thing, is that why shouldn't we be offering it? Now, when you have a look at it, okay, every business wants to know where their next bit of income's coming from. They love the ongoing clients, the retainer clients and all that sort of stuff, where it's that big monthly fee coming in that they know, okay, yep, for this particular week we're going to be getting this. Oh, okay, yeah, we know, okay, we've got our retainer clients, so maybe during the Christmas, New Year period when that drops down a bit, yeah, we've still got enough with those retainer clients and things from there. So, you know, if that's what business loves and that's what business wants, what makes you think that your employees aren't going to be the same one? They want to know that, okay, yes, hey, yes, you know, I'm a casual, so my hours will be up and down a bit. But then, hey, if I go part-time, yes, they may turn around and say, oh, okay, you know, as a part-time employee, we can give you, you know, 16 hours, we can guarantee you 16 hours a week ongoing work. They may have been working, you know, 25 as a casual, though, because I know they get that minimum of 16 hours a week, they could turn around and say, yep, okay, and then anything else after that, would it be overtime or part of ordinary hours? Well, you know, that's up to the business to decide from there and how it gets worked. On a side note, I'm going through a bit of a phase of Rooibos tea at the moment, so just it's sitting there in front of me, and it's just one of those little things. Oh, I've got to have it. So anyway, but this is the thing, is that why shouldn't we be doing that? Why shouldn't we be offering our employees, our staff, our biggest advocates for our business of what we do, why shouldn't we be offering them an incentive to stay? Because going back to the, you know, whatever the industry is that, okay, you've got a great employee there, you've turned around and said, oh, no, I'm not going to offer them. Actually, no, you do have to offer them because it's in the ward, so then they can approach you and say yes. Okay, so let's say you come up with a half-baked excuse and justification about why you can't make this person permanent part-time despite them asking you. So they've turned around and said, yep, okay, that's fine. Competition opens up down the road somewhere closer to home for this person, and they said, oh, you know, but hey, yeah, you know what, give them the lure, come and work for us for 12 months, you get your ongoing hours, and we'll make you part-time after that. Would that employee stick with you knowing that you're not going to make them permanent part-time, part-time, or would they go to a competitor for the same money that they're on now that's closer to home with the lure of going to part-time after the minimum period of 12 months. So, but this is the thing. I mean, you know, what, are you just going to treat them as just, you know, a burden on your business or what? So, but anyway, there are, you know, there's a number of different things that we can talk about with that. That it's, I don't think that this clause is going to wreck businesses if business knows how to get the flexibility out of the workforce. Now, yes, I understand, as I said before, that there will be circumstances where you do need to employ casuals. Retail around the, you know, the big seasons like, you know, the Christmas season, things like that, and what other, you know, whatever other big seasons that they have where there's, you know, a bit more of a greater influx in sales, so they need more staff on the floor and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, you know, I understand that, and that's when the casual labour and when you can use, you know, after schoolies and uni students and all that sort of stuff. But I'm talking about your ongoing employees that have given you the same amount of time over the last 12 months. But anyway, I'm not going to continue on that one because I'm sure I will get on my soapbox again. Now, the next thing I wanted to talk about was the relaunch of AustralianIndustrialRelations.com. Now, some of you who have been following this podcast in its ups and downs will be aware of that site. If not, head on over there and have a look at it. Now, what I have plans for this site is for this to be, a meeting ground, melting pot, whatever you want to call it, of a resource of various industrial relations related articles and topics and things like that. I am in the process of interviewing and going through some guests that I will be talking to on that. So there'll be a Australian Industrial Relations podcast as well. So that will be dealing with someone who is in the field of industrial relations and how they manage it and how what they can do or advice that they can give and things like that. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about with that was that we are looking for, if you're a consultant or a business owner and you do deal with industrial relations related matters, if you head on over to the Write For Us page, but I'll include a link to the page in the show notes of this one, that you can submit articles and things like that. Now, what will make this one different to every other site out there as well is that these will be paid articles. Now, this is the thing. I am a big believer in not doing things for nothing. Doing a guest post on a page somewhere really doesn't cut it because you're still getting time, you're spending your time and money writing out an article for that to go onto someone else's page and for them to get some sort of revenue from that and not share it with those who wrote the article and are attracting people to that article. That's something that really challenges me and all that sort of stuff. So the reason for that is, yeah, so they will be paid articles, the rates and all that sort of stuff. I'm still working out, though, when the site does go live and the call does get put out for contributing authors, the details and information like that will be revealed then. So head on over to AustralianIndustrialRelations.com. You'll find Write For Us and memberships. There will be a membership on there, and that's think $5 a month or $2 a month. All that does is gives you access to extended podcasts. It gives you ad-free viewing on the site. So, you know, there'll be obviously a couple ads on the site and all that sort of stuff. So you can view it ad-free and things like that. And there'll be some other stuff that gets revealed later on as time goes by. So head on over to AustralianIndustrialRelations.com. If you want to become a member for a couple of dollars a month, do that. There'll be articles that are relating to industrial relations, relevant articles, not the, million emails a day, million articles a day. So these will be particularly chosen ones from there. There's also, as I said, the podcast. There'll be the normal podcast that will be available to other people. And then if you're a member, you'll get the extended podcast with some other stuff involved in that. So that was it on that one. As I said, head on over there. Now, speaking of memberships, now there is, I'm changing the IR Simplified website. You may have noticed that over the last couple of weeks. That is also now becoming a membership site. So in line with the move from being general consulting to more of an education provider. So yes, there is memberships, varies in price depending on which one that you want to choose. And if you take out one of those memberships, is that you will get either discounts or free courses and things like that. So head on over to that, and head on over. That's on the IR Simplified website, so you'll be able to see that under irsimplified.com.au/join. Now, that's all the plugs and all that sort of stuff that I've got for this episode. Now, one thing that I did want to talk about was the release that was put out by the Fair Work Ombudsman a couple of weeks ago. I think it's probably about a month ago now, talking about the relationship that they don't have with the organisation EmployeeSure. Now, for those who know, EmployeeSure has been copying it in the press by someone else in that area, and you know, it's a thing. It's one of the experts that I love to go to for pointing out how much experts push their own agenda. So this is the thing, is that, you know, EmployeeSure, whether they did something wrong, I'm not passing judgment on that. From what I understand, some of their practices may have been less than transparent, though by that token, you could say the same thing about every website that has, or every business that has Fair Work in their name. And now, you know, it's the thing, is that I think for the commission to, the ombudsman to make a statement about that they should be doing it to every organization, every website. I mean, you have a look on, you know, type in Fair Work, whatever, and you'll see all these things come up with Fair Work. You know, it's so where do you draw the line? You know, I think it comes down to that businesses should do their own due diligence, not just swept along by the bright shiny object syndrome, where someone comes in and they're doing this. If these organisations do have high pressure sales tactics and restrictive terms of service and contracts and everything like that, well, then that's up to the respective the ACCC and the respective fair trading organisations. So, you know, it's the thing, is that I think that's something that should go through there. I think that the ombudsman made is it a mistake? I don't think that they did the right thing by singling out this one organisation. And now, this is the other thing. Okay, I mean, when you have a look at it, and there was a media report that the head honcho of EmployeeSure did turn around and say that they felt that this was a bit of, was it sour grapes or something like that from their competition being Workforce Guardian? And this was mentioned in one of the articles. Now, what makes this interesting is that Workforce Guardian, from an outsider's perspective, regardless of whether you agree with them or not, they do consider EmployeeSure as a competitor, because you have a look on their website, and if the link's still there, if it's that page is still there, I'll include it in the show notes, that they do consider, as I said, EmployeeSure as a competitor, because they do the breakdown. They do, this is us compared to them. So, you know, it's the thing. If, those in that, in Workforce Guardian were really concerned about the way that EmployeeSure responded and did everything like that, why are they trying to promote themselves as, this is, you know, we're better than them because we're cheaper, we give you this? You know, if they're a competitor, but that's the thing. I think, you know, ultimately what part of it probably came down to was a bit of sour grapes from those involved in that organisation compared to the other one. I think that there should have been, every business that has Fair Work or something like that in their name or their website should be, you know, spoken to as well, and should have the same, you know, stick waved at them as the organisation EmployeeSure has, and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, that was my thoughts on that one. What I'd like to do is hear yours. Was that something that they did, you know, that the commission, the ombudsman made the right decision in pointing out that they're not part of EmployShore, they're not associated with EmployShore, or should they have gone through every organisation or every business that has Fair Work or has a Fair Work website? So, yes, so you can leave your question, comments and all that sort of stuff down below in the show notes, or send me an email, or even call up the IR Simplified podcast line, which is 1-300-234-947. And now when you go through the IVR, you will press button 9. You will go through to the podcast answering machine and you can leave a message there. Now I'm in the process of working out a way to take calls, whether it comes in through a different line that I'll be setting up and all that sort of stuff, but that will be coming soon, so there'll be a chance for, actually head on over to the IR Simplified Facebook page, which I will include a link to as well. So head on over to there and you will get, I will include a notice there when I'm opening up the lines to take phone calls with regards to any questions or for you to be part of the podcast. So what else? I think that's about it for this one. Just a bit of a recap on what I was talking about at the start about the casuals and the conversion clause that's going to be listed, that's going to be included in Modern Awards. I don't think that it's a big killer for business. I don't think it's going to reduce the flexibility at anything like that. I think that it is just something that business groups are doing their usual skies falling and this and that and woe is us and look at we're being picked on and everything like that. So, but anyway, that was about it for this one. Now, I do recommend that you subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on SoundCloud, or wherever you saw it. Give me a thumbs up or thumbs down if you liked it. Comments and all that sort of stuff are greatly appreciated. And please tune in for next week's episode, where I'm going to be going through a bit more of a discussion on registered organisations and why I don't think it's in a business's best interest to be part of a registered organisation. So, until then, my name's Cameron Blewett. This was the IR Simplified podcast, and thank you for listening, and bye for now.